Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Carlo Ammi. He spent some years writing a book called The Wake Up Book, which he believes is a book to help us cope in times of stress and will help many in the process of ascension. So, welcome to the program, Carlo.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate your having me on the air.
You've had a pretty tough life so far, I gather, from reading about your previous years. What do you think you've learned from your life so far?
Well, maybe the biggest lesson, and sometimes we get these lessons over and over again until we really integrate them fully. But maybe the biggest lesson is, you know, accepting what is and, you know, trusting what's coming. So I think a lot of us and myself in a lot of my life, I spent a lot of time pushing the river, so to speak, you know, fighting what was in front of me rather than seeing what I could learn from it or what might be a better way to respond to life.
Did you at any stage prior to beginning your book set out with something like that in mind?
You know, I've been writing about 14 years. The first book took me about 7 years, and the second book took me about 7 years to finish up. You know, prior to that, I was kind of a loose cannon. I didn't have a whole lot of discipline in my life, and there was a lot of chaos and challenge. And personally, I went through a lot of stretches of where I was depressed. So I had a lot of challenges early on in life, in the early parts of my life, I didn't respond to them very very effectively, Michael.
Right. So overall, you've taken quite some time to write each one of your books. Was there any particular reason for it taking so long?
Well, the ideas for the books, you know, come to me sometimes. You know, over a course of several days, I'll get to two or three messages or things that I want to take in their rough form and then fine tune. And other times, you know, there are weeks and sometimes months where nothing really comes to me that much. Over the course of the last year or so, it's been a little more rapid. But for the most part, it comes when it comes, and usually it's occurred when I've been in a place in nature where I find the most inspiration. So these are things that come to me. I consider myself a messenger, and you know, especially over the course of the last several years, I've been much more tuned into my guidance than I've been before. So it's guidance that I listen to, and you know, it doesn't come all the time real quickly. It comes when it comes.
Right. Now, you do speak of your guides and also your connection with the ascended masters. Did you ever get to know with which particular masters you had the contact with?
I've always had some affinity for Saint Germain and Babaji, and yet many of the messages come through without any kind of name on them. I just open myself up, especially when I'm in nature. I just open myself up to whatever guidance comes. So a lot of times there's no real name or association with a particular ascended master. It just comes to me.
Right. Now, you refer to seeing star dots, and I think you interpret these as being the guides that are in contact with you. Can you tell us a bit about that and when that first started?
It first started several years ago when I was in a very special place in the Southern California desert that I'd literally been guided to, back in the, about 1994 actually, and I would see stars in the sky, and I'd kind of focus on a star, and it would start to move, and for quite some time it would move into the horizon or not do anything particularly that was inspirational. But back in 2007, I spent 7 months in what they call a private inholding. It was 100 acres that was completely surrounded by national forest, and there were only six of us on 100 acres. So it was a time that I had chosen to retreat from the big city of San Diego and tune into nature more thoroughly and for an extended period of time. And it was then that I would get, sometimes 5 or 6 messages per night. I would come out of the small crater that I lived in and look up into the sky. I would focus on a star that was still in the sky, and then it would start to move. Over the course of 7 months, the stars would come down, sometimes multiple star dots, and other times just one. The star dot would come down, and it would make different movements, and I basically created a communication with it. I would ask, "Was this the message you're trying to give me?" When I kind of felt a message come in, and up and down would be yes, and sideways would be no, back and forth sideways would be a no. So, over the course of 7 months, I took about 300 pages of notes, and that's the next book.
Right.
It would really give me some very interesting and powerful messages. It would show me places on my body to massage, because it would move around to position itself so that I could see my shadow, and then it would do various things on my shadow. So I would spend about 5 to 10 minutes at a time with it, and then I'd go back into the trailer and I'd write all the notes down, and then I'd come back out and repeat it, sometimes 4, 5, 6 times a night sometimes.
Right. So when the star dots got nearer to you, did they still look like stars, or did they have a different color or shape?
You know, they weren't any bigger than a good sized star. Sometimes as they came down, there would seem to be a sphere around them. It looked more in size like a basketball of a sphere that was much more subtle. And other times, several of them would come down. There would seem to be a portal of sorts where, in one night, I counted over 100 just coming streaming on down. I went to the vortex area of that special place that I had, was sitting in the desert, for example, and I could see what appeared to be hundreds of them gathered at the campsite. So, again, never any names as such, but I would receive guidance. I would call them in at times.
It's amazing. I haven't heard of anyone with a similar experience. I know these days people do see orbs, but they appear to be, from description, somewhat different to what you've actually seen. So that's quite almost a unique experience, I would think.
Well, most of the orbs, and as a brief aside here, most of the orbs, Michael, in my experience, are ones that are seen when you do digital photography, particularly clearly. They come out when you take flash photography. And I've taken some pretty amazing pictures of orbs, not only in hot ponds here in Hawaii, but also during the nighttime. And when I've called them in, I've gotten clearer pictures of them. But I've never seen an orb just with the naked eye. It's usually something that comes out in a digital photograph, in my experience.
Right, yes. I gather some people do, but that's besides the point. Now, I noticed that through your life, from your school days, I guess, or your family life onwards, you seem to have some problem with anger. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you've overcome it?
Well, from a very young age, I had a sense that, I really wasn't connected to a lot of the people that were closest to me, at least family and the religious influences that were kind of put in front of me to accept or be rejected by.
Right.
But I always wanted to kind of ask people, what's the matter with you? Because so many people seemed angry and upset and petty and the religious influences, which were really kind of an indoctrination in my family, you know, were something that I could never understand or really accept. So I was kind of a rebel when it came to the religious influences that I had. So, you know, I was pretty angry that it didn't seem like I was fitting in with a lot of people. I felt different. And, you know, it took me until I was well into my 40s to really get clarity on what we're here for and what life's asking us to do. So a lot of this, a lot of the clarity came through in my times of solitude. When I was in nature, in the desert particularly, that's where I found a lot of clarity. But more and more clarity came to me to the extent that it became important to me as I moved beyond the anger. It became important to me to share the kinds of things that I was being guided to see and shared them with receptive hearts. So that's really central to me right now, to not only integrate love in a full manner, but to share you know, simplification of ideas. The mind tends to want to complicate everything, and you know, if we get clarity on just a few small issues, it's a whole lot easier to move beyond the anxiety that so many people have with what's going on in the world right now.
Right. You've made one or two very neat quotations. I like the idea that the deepest wisdom comes from within, and I guess that's what you were really referring to in your last few comments. How do people tap the wisdom that they have?
Well, I guess the most important aspect of it is in how we identify with ourselves. Because, you know, if we identify with the body and mind as who we are, we just are setting ourselves up for disappointment and frustration. So one of the key things that I love to share with people is to recognize that, you know, looking into the self, if we identify the self as the heart and soul, and we can recognize or intuit that the soul is an infinite entity. It goes on and on. So the, you know, when the body dies, it's not like it's all over. It's just a transition. So if one can start tuning into that possibility and identify with the heart and soul, then life becomes infinitely saner, more sane, right, I guess is the word. It's that, Michael, and it's a recognition also, from my perspective, is to, you know, what real power is. Because if we're egoically identified, then we see power as the, you know, the opportunity to manipulate somebody or to gather more money or to have a cuter girlfriend or a whole kinds of variety of things that in the end don't really make much difference. Power, as Martin Luther King recognized back in the 60s, he said that, you know, sometimes the power and love are seen as polar opposites. And I think part of a huge part of the reason we're all here is to recognize that you know, if it's not based in power, excuse me, if it's not based in love, then it isn't power.
Right.
So you know, one of the decrees that I ask people to play with, and I come up with some decrees that again, I like all the things in my books, I encourage people to edit them to fit who they are. You know, the lead decree that I ask people to consider is, you know, I declare and decree my recognition that all true power is based in love at depth. I am this power, and together we're all one and unified. We're a loving, connected power. So I think that's a key aspect of it, because as long as we're egoically based in our minds, then we can't really unfold the depth of our love. It's impossible.
Right. Yes, I will go along with what you've said there. Now, just as a side issue here, when you sent me one of your emails, you put at the bottom of mine greeting, meaning I am another yourself. Now, were those people of interest to you? I mean, have they come into your life in some way and helped you to find the answers to things?
When you speak of other people, I'm wanting to understand what you're saying.
Yeah, you finished one of your emails off with the in Lakesh Alakin, and you said was a Mayan greeting, meaning I am another self. So I wondered if the Mayan people were figured somewhere in your life, and perhaps you learned something from them.
Oh, I have, and I really enjoy studying the Mayan calendar, and particularly the work of Carl Kalman, whose work on the Mayan calendar I've really resonated with. He's got a marvelous book called The Mayan Calendar and the Transformation of Consciousness. And so, yes, the whole idea in Lakesh Alakin is, you know, we're all one, we're all connected, and it's not something that we're ever going to get out of any kind of definitive source from the outer world. It's something that we get to tune in to our own inner wisdom, the will and the wisdom of the heart, and feel how that resonates. So that's a huge part of what I like to share with people is, you know, have the courage to go within yourself and have the trust to be with the will and the wisdom of the heart and let it guide you rather than all the external institutions and sources that oftentimes feed you misinformation.
Yes, indeed. I would again go along with that. You've mentioned the Mayan people and their calendar, and I notice in your book you mention, as you call it, the mysterious anticipated shift of 2012. Now, what does that mean to you?
Well, it's going to be a major shift. It's going to be the lifting of the veil. And, you know, the word apocalypse, when people look at that word and they go, oh, that's when the world's going to blow up and it's going to be like all the things in the book of Revelation where the world's just going to be going totally insane and might be the end of the world for some people. But I don't believe that's where we're going. I believe it's the lifting of the veil, which is what the word apocalypse means. So what's coming in 2012, I believe, is a full unfolding of the consciousness of humankind. It's something that we can't know exactly what's going to happen. And if we try to figure it out with the mind, and if we try to figure it out with just science, then we end up running around in circles and frustration. There's no way to know. And, of course, there's all kinds of people out now that are stocking up food supplies and they're building shelters that go 14 stories deep and all these other things because they're in fear about what's going to happen. And I think that the huge thing that we're being asked to accept here communally is the letting go of fear. The willingness to be with what is and to trust what is coming, and you know, let our lives unfold accordingly rather than living in fear and anxiety about what's coming up in another year and a half.
Right. Right. I think there's an expression that covers that very well, which is go with the flow, or as some people say, let go, let God.
Yes. Those are beautiful, and they're simple. What I like about those statements is that they make a powerful statement in as very few words as possible, and that's been really the keynote of what I've tried to create in my writings over the years is, you know, how can I say this in the most powerful way with the fewest words? Because we want simplicity and we want clarity and depth. But the mind tends to complicate everything. It's part of what mind does. It makes things difficult and complicated and muddies them up. And it wants to look to institutions like governments and religions and even the next latest greatest self-help speaker to answer our problems for us and to solve all the riddles. We look to science and religion and government for these things, and the thing that I love to share with people is the idea that it's worth considering going within for these things And it's something that, you know, communally we've never really been taught how to go within our own selves and to trust the wisdom that we find in the heart.
Right. Now, what did you mean in your book when you said hope is empty of what matters?
Well, hope tends to be, you know, no matter how the dictionary defines it, hope tends to imply really strongly that there's some kind of outside or external force that's going to save you or that is going to fix things for you. And if we look exclusively to external sources or even primarily to external sources, then we're setting ourselves up for disappointment. What I believe the universe is asking us to do now is to learn how to go within ourselves and trust our intuitive wisdom, the will and the wisdom of the heart.
Right. There appears to be some interference in the background, Carlo. Is that on you? Can you hear that? Or
There's a dog barking outside, but other than that, it's pretty quiet here.
Oh, right. Okay. No, it sounds like some sort of, I don't know, electrical noise. Anyway, it seems to have subsided now. It was making it a little difficult for me to hear you, but it's cleared now, so that's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Now, I love some of your sayings in the book, which I've made notes of, and I like the idea of trust that all that occurs is in perfection now. People might not understand that. Would you like to comment on that one?
Well, it's one of the key things I love to share with people, and I think as we are able to really get this one, at least for me, it makes all the difference. So to synthesize that all down, it's basically if I trust that everything that I experience, every person that crosses my path is my teacher, then I set myself up for a whole lot smoother sailing in life, because, you know, it's pretty difficult to be angry with somebody if you think they're your teacher. Maybe it's somebody that... maybe it's a partner that's angry with you, or somebody is yelling at you, and without what you see as good reason, you know, the ego says, "I need to get back at this person. I need to let them know how terribly wrong they are." Well, you know, that doesn't really fix anything. If I can respond to even the most challenging situation in a loving manner, then I grow my love, and I grow the love in the world. So, you know, it's a really tough one for a lot of people to get that, you know, everything that happens to you is your teacher.
Right, yes. I can certainly understand that, although people might not necessarily believe that to be the case. I suppose what we're really looking at there are situations where people find it necessary to blame people for something or feel that they're the victim of circumstances, but you would say that is an opportunity to learn from and, as you use the expression, perhaps choose to be happy.
Yes, and to kind of extend on that one, little Michael, you know, there's kind of an epidemic in the world, and been going on for quite some time, and it's called a justifiable resentment. Now, you know, that's kind of oxymoronic in my mindset. But, you know, if somebody harmed you, did you wrong, you know, you have a choice to either carry around energy that hurts you or to forgive that person. So, there are people that carry on, you know, lifelong justifiable resentments, and the only person that hurts is the person who's carrying that resentment. So, you know, the way that I like to look at it is, you know, can I forgive that person? So many experiences that we have, you know, there can be opportunities for things like thankfulness or forgiveness or just presence and acceptance. But if we're associating with the egoic mind, you know, those just aren't options a lot of the times. So being with what is, accepting what is, doesn't mean that you don't aspire to something higher. It doesn't mean that you're anticipating it's going to go on and on and on in a negative way. It simply means that right now you can be with it. There's a wonderful author whose name is escaping me at the moment, and you know, he shares these two ideas that really, really impact me. He says when things are challenging, you know, there's just two questions to ask yourself. The first question is, what's happening right now? So you be with what you look at whatever's happening in the given moment, and you say, okay, this is what's going on. The second question to ask yourself is, can I be with it? So, you know, those are hugely important questions when things seem to be hitting the fan. They're really important questions because if you can be with what's happening in the moment, if you can accept it, it doesn't mean that you're resigning to it for the long term. It simply means that you're with it now. And presence is really a key aspect to the unfolding, you know, for all of us. It's about being with what is.
Right. And on that subject, I think you've thrown out a very nice idea that the truest beneficiary of forgiveness is the one who is forgiving.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And thankfulness pays the same kind of benefits. If you can be thankful for somebody that maybe gave you a lesson that was harsh, but it was still a lesson that you could understand. Maybe it was just a lesson of responding with love. If you can be thankful for that person and respond to them with love, then you're building your own energy, your own power.
Hmm. Right. I know you have, all through your book, a lot of good advice, and it's really first class, I have to say that. I mean, in talking to you now, we're only touching some of the points in the book. Mm-hmm. Now, you talk in one section about breathing in through the heart to help you get over high stress. Can you explain that?
Well, there's a number of breathing techniques that can be really beneficial, and given the way that the big picture is set up, we all have ones that may work better for us than others. Visualizing energy coming into your heart as you take a deep breath and filling that heart with loving energy, it can be extremely helpful. I also love to share with people the idea of bringing a smile to their face, getting their body posture such that their shoulders are back and their chin is up and there's a big smile on their face. And then with a deep breath in, take that smile energy down into the heart and let it expand. If you do 3 or 4 breaths that way, even if you've just been in a really challenging situation, it's really almost impossible to be depressed or angry. I would encourage your listeners to play with that idea, because body state and breathing in loving energy consciously can make for a big shift.
Right, and indeed on that same subject, I like your idea that we should laugh at the challenges of life.
Yeah, humor's crucial. The egoic mind doesn't really tune into humor a lot. It can tune into things like sarcasm, which is just aggression, and it can tune into other things that pretend to be humor. But you know, if you're laughing with a situation rather than at a situation, you know, it can make for major shifts. So. You know, that's one of the key aspects of what I'd love to share with people is, you know, how can I find some humor in this situation rather than look upon it as some kind of a thorn in my soul.
Yes.
And just feeling good. It's another one of what I call the freedom keys. To consciously choose to do what it takes to feel good as much of the time as possible. And part of that is finding the humor in things, and another part of that is simply choosing presence rather than being in the past or the future. As we can more and more choose to be in the present moment, then humor is much more of an easy flow. It's when we get into looking at the past with remorse or the future with anxiety, fear, that we go into a whole lot more challenged mode.
Right, yes. You remind me of some occasions when I was working. I'm retired now. Mm-hmm. When I would have to go to the boss's office and I had an idea, perhaps it was something I might be pulled over the coals over. Mm-hmm. So I always found that if I approached these people and I smiled, it seemed to defuse the situation, which is really similar to what you're saying, isn't it?
Well, yes, and when people choose to do the opposite of that, when the boss yells at them and one's response is to furrow the brow and start turning colors maybe shoot back a smart remark that isn't too respectful, that's when the fuel gets added to the fire of the anger or upset. So if we can respond to more and more of the situations we face with a loving response, then we're feeding love and we're doing what we came here to do, which is to unfold the full nature of our love.
Right. And it's also, I feel, a very interesting idea that you put forward in the book, that you're saying my response to life is a direct reflection of my inner perceptions of who I am. That might come over a little bit more understandable if you could give us an example of that.
Our actions in life, they're not just actions that occur always as responses that come from the heart. So our actions come from really who we see. We see ourselves as being. So our actions really come from who we're being, rather than the various stimuluses and outside experiences and external perceptions that we perceive. They're really a result of who we are at depth when we tune into that depth. So if we're immersed in feeling like who we are is someone who's struggling to make ends meet or struggling to find the right relationship or set of friends, if we see life as a struggle, and that's who we see ourselves really as being, as someone who's struggling to get to some place, then our actions are going to reflect that.
Yes, indeed. And I think that something, again, that we referred to a little earlier also comes up in your book, saying that rather than feeling victimized, be thankful for what you are experiencing as an opportunity to practice love.
Yes. Yes, so often if we see ourselves as being persecuted and we end up defining ourselves as someone who's being persecuted. So the world, as we see ourselves in that way, we tend to gravitate to us, bring to us, magnetize to us, people who would like to maybe victimize us or control or manipulate us. So it's how we see ourselves that really determines the kinds of experiences and situations that we bring to us. The other point I'd love to make about that, that I think is really an important one, and that is that we tend to use the word want, and the phrase I want. So when we use that rather than the word intend, then the universe sees us not as a person who's going to get what we want, but as a person who wants. So we become more and more in a situation where we're not getting what we think we want. We have basically defined ourselves as a person who wants, and the universe is cooperating. They say, okay, here's a person who wants, and now we're going to send them situations for people who want that particular thing or situation.
Right, right. So from that, I gather you do believe that we attract things to ourselves through our thinking or desires.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's to me that's a real crucial and important one. What we intend, and if we trust we can have what we intend, then we tend to bring it to us. if we doubt, then we tend to bring in situations that are muddier. So I love the way Gary Zukav created the challenge there that's in front of us all. He said, you know, at any given time, you're coming from one of two places, Michael. You're coming from either love and trust or fear and doubt. So, you know, the challenge that's in front of all of us is to choose more and more frequently to choose to come from a place of love and trust.
Yes. Do you think in some of the situations we've spoken of that people have a problem with their ego?
Ego is really a kind of an amazing non-entity that we've given energy to. Yes, ego is the problem, and the paradox is that there really isn't any such thing as ego except as we give it our energy. We've basically been conditioned, and that's a lot of what I like to share with people in my writings is, you know, we've been conditioned by all these external influences to create the egoic mind that it's all about manipulation and control and a bigger house, a better car than the neighbor's got, all these things that don't really make any difference. So reconditioning ourselves simply means, for me, a two-step process. And I'm not pretending that I've completed the process myself. I'm still working on it. The process basically is to really get in touch with the will and wisdom of the heart and what you believe at depth. So it's really about getting totally in touch with what you believe. And that means trusting the heart in the intuitive sense. One gets to the point where, after a while, no beliefs are required. You simply operate from who you're being, and all your actions and thoughts and such come from who you are and who you see yourself as being. So that negates the need for any beliefs. You just operate out of who you are.
Right. Now, we'll move on here to some parts of your book, which are very much almost entirely covering help for people who are suffering from stress. And you give some practical tips, such as using acupressure points and things like that. Mm-hmm. I recall you mentioned something about the side jump, but I can't remember exactly what it was. But can you comment on that?
That is from my ebook, which is called What to Do When It Hits the Fan.
Oh, right.
And that's from the ebook, and the ebook is loaded with a variety of coping skills and tools to help people with stress. There are a couple of aspects I'd like to mention for your listeners, and that is there are two different organizations that are really worth looking at. One's called Body Talk. And if you Google or search the term balancing the cortices, CORTICES, balancing the cortices, comma body talk being one word, they have a video that will come up for you to look at, and it's an exercise I like to do at least 3 or 4 times daily. The other one that you mentioned, the side jump, those are taken from something it's going to come to me, the actual school of thought, but I'm spacing it at the moment, Michael. they're basically exercises that are very simple to do, and I'll post them up on my website for you on the blog, but the name of the actual school of thought's not coming to me, but those are all detailed, or the most crucial elements of those are detailed in the ebook called What to Do When It Hits the Fan.
Right. So can you just repeat that name of the balancing the codices, whatever it was that you said can be Googled, so that I can write it down?
Sure. First, balancing the cortices, CORTICES.
Yeah.
And the second one is called Body Talk, which is one word, Body Talk.
Oh, Body Talk.
Yeah.
I think it's bodytalk.com, but if you put in balancing the choruses there, they'll take you pretty much right to the video in your search. And the video is really what is important to look at in order to learn how to do it. It's really about balancing your brain, it's grounding and centering, and it's particularly helpful to do when there are stressful times happening. Ditto with what's called the cross crawl. Cross crawl if you Google cross crawl, you'll find videos on how to do that as well.
Right. You've obviously put these things to use yourself. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the most efficient or helpful exercise you can do for stress or stress relief?
For me, it's breathing in a smile. I mean, that's the one that I do most frequently myself. That doesn't mean that's the way it works for everyone. But for me, if I can bring in the smile down to the heart and let that smile energy expand into my entire body, I find that is extremely relaxing, calming, and grounding.
Right. Now, I believe at different stages in the book, you've also used affirmations. Have you got one favorite one in this case?
Well, affirmations as such, the term affirmation is not one I like to use a lot. I call them self-statements. They're things that you basically come up with that work just for you. So particular affirmations, I don't like to share those simply because there's always a way that for somebody else, they might change one word of that so-called affirmation to make it more powerful for them. So it's a key aspect to what I love to share with people is that, maybe take a look at what I've written in this short idea for your consideration, but then go within and ask your heart if that's a fit for you, and let your heart guide you as to whether or not that's a fit for you, or whether changing maybe one word, the whole thing, is going to make it a better fit for you. So that's a key aspect to virtually everything I love to share with people is, sure, this idea may have merit for you, but what if you change one word that amped up the power for you a little bit? So nothing that I share with people I like to lay out as ultimate truths. I simply like to give people starting points. And maybe they'll land at exactly the same point with that particular idea. Maybe they'll come up with something else.
Right. Now, you talk of healing power, and you say, trust that your power will go where it is best used. Now, I can't quite recall in what context you were speaking of healing power, but are you talking of people creating the healing power for their own body or receiving healing power from another source?
I believe we're all potential healers, many people have mastered how to do that, and there are certain aspects that some people have been given where one type of power is more effective than another for that particular person. So I'm a strong believer in reconnective healing and in Reiki and a whole variety of other powers that have to do with healing other people. So in the healing power that I do, which is the part that you were referring to, Michael, when I can send healing energy to someone else, and I usually do that with the hands held up facing, the palms facing the person, I believe we all have the power, as we allow it, to send healing energy to other people who are receptive. The key for me to healing power when I'm doing a healing session with someone is simply to ask that person to not have any particular energy on receiving any kind of healing at all, to trust that the energy will go where it's intended and where spirit wants it to go. So that's the part that you're referring to, Michael, is when actually doing an energy healing session with someone is to not for the healer and the person receiving to not have any real energy on whether they're going to get a healing or not, and to just allow spirit to take that energy where it's going to be most effective, and to distrust that and allow whatever's going to happen to happen.
Right, yes. Do you feel in that event that people would necessarily need to go to another healer? Would it be best to develop self-healing?
Self-healing is wonderful, and, you know, we can give ourselves healing as well. You know, energy can be sent through the palms, and I'm a oneness blessing giver, and strongly believe in the beauty and the power of Diksha, or the oneness blessing. And it's something that is usually done where, you know, the hands are laid on the top of one's head, that you're the person that you're giving the energy to. But it can also be done for the self. And so when you're in a challenged mode, to lay both your hands on the top of your skull, more a little towards the front, and to just let that be for a minute or two. If you trust it without any kind of attachment to a result, then it can be pretty amazing the results that you can get just by healing yourself. I believe we're all healers, and we simply are in a mode now where we're learning that we have that capacity. We have all kinds of capacities we're not even aware of that have to do with not only healing but connection with other energies, and it's just a matter of tuning into those and trusting them, learning how to trust them.
Right. Do you believe in the power of prayer?
I believe in the power of prayer that is not prayer of what they call supplication, asking for something. The prayer that I believe has the real power is where you visualize and see something that you would intend to be already created, already there for you. To see that in your mind. I think that's the most powerful prayer, Michael. Asking for something out of hope or vanity or desperation, it tends not to be the kind of prayer that works for most people. But if I can see it as already accomplished, then that's the real powerful prayer, and to involve as many of the senses as possible in that prayer is also really helpful. To have in your mind not only the sight but the sounds, maybe even the aromas that are connected to what you would intend to create for either yourself or another. This makes the prayer powerful.
Right. Now, since you talk of ascension, and your book basically is to help people prepare for that, mm-hmm. As I understand it, ascension includes, or is in fact, about raising your levels of consciousness. Now, how do you think one can best approach that?
I guess awareness, Michael, is the key. Awareness of what's going on with you now, and trust in what is coming. In terms of ascension and maybe the word enlightenment too, these are terms that we don't really have a key as to what they really entail in practical terms. We can't understand really exactly how the shift's going to happen. It may be that we all go into a different dimension. There's all kinds of different things that could happen. So part of ascension is not needing to define exactly what it is, but to trust that it's all unfolding in perfection, and then to be in awareness and trust, and to absorb and reflect as much love as possible. That's really the key to it, is to be more and more consistent in responding to everything in life with love. Trying to define it or trying to provoke it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And it's not something that you can say, well, you know, I'm going to do this and this and this, and now I'm going to be enlightened, or I'm going to ascend, and as soon as I do all these things. Well, I believe ascension and enlightenment are things that come not by our efforts as much as by us, you know, cleaning our slates, conditioning ourselves, and then enlightenment or ascension is something that's bestowed. It comes from the universe rather than from our efforting. The effort to enlighten and expand reaches a point where you don't take the last step until you drop the effort. The effort gets in the way after a certain point. Just being who you are, recognizing who you are at depth, and letting your actions and thoughts reflect that thoroughly in a regular way, that's what encourages the bestowing by the universe of enlightenment, rather than my having to feeling like I have to do certain things, and then by my effort, I will reach a state of ascension or enlightenment.
Right. Well, Carlo, we're coming up to the end of my program, and I will, as usual, take the last minute to briefly give details of next week's guests. So would you like to take a minute or so to tell people your website address, where they or how they can obtain your book?
Yes, the website address is yourpausebutton.com, and I'm offering now not only the printable ebook, the entire book, which is 275 pages, but also I'm including no additional charge the What to Do When It Hits the Fan book. And those are available at yourpausebutton.com. I mean, you see the heart as the pause button, and if we can tune into the pause button, get quiet, go within, that's really, for me, the key to more fully unfolding my loving nature.
Right. So what would be your final message to people that are really looking for help to get through this relatively short period to the end of 2012, if they do believe that ascension will take place?
Well, to choose, my suggestion would be to choose to more and more let go of relying upon external people and institutions in order to give you the answers to life and to give you the calm, the wisdom, the happiness that you may be looking for, but to rather tune more and more frequently within yourself. Tune into the will and the wisdom of the heart as your guide, as the true way of getting in touch with what's truly important to unfolding the complete nature of your love. And I believe we're all loving beings at depth. We simply need to get out of the way of our own selves.
Well, thank you for that message, Carlo. It's been very interesting talking to you. As I've mentioned, your book really is first class, and it's full of spiritual advice and help, so I do hope you find it to be a great success, which I think it deserves to be.
So thank you so much, Michael.
You're very welcome. Well, thank you. Friends, next week I'm going to have Jack Ellis as my guest. He has been on before. He is a very good speaker. He is an author and a spiritual teacher, and he wants to come on and talk about his new DVD, which is titled 2012 and the Shift, The Power of Ceremony. And obviously I have already seen the DVD, and Jack's got a nice easy way of getting his message over, so I do hope you can make it, and I look forward to having you all with me once again. So thank you for being with me today. God bless you all. Thank you.